It's happy hour again from the Collins Hotel on beautiful St. Charles Avenue in Uptown New Orleans. Hello, I'm Grant Morris. The Collins Hotel is a wonderful place to come and stay if you're coming to visit us here in New Orleans. If you're already here, come down and have a drink anytime or right now. Join us for happy hour, and my special guests this week are Brooke Etheridge, who's an English instructor at Loyola University by day, and by night she's Sadist Hawkins from the Big Easy Roller Girls. Hello, Sadist. I'm okay. Do you mind if I call you Sadist?
Not at all.
Okay. Kate Finlayson is an award-winning actress and acting coach, and also known as a teacher of movement dance therapy known as NIA.
Yes, that's right.
All right. Thank you very much. And the two gentlemen on my left wearing matching baseball caps are Brian Normand in the orange t-shirt and Patrick Bowden in the green t-shirt, communally known as Force Feed Radio.
That's right. That's a good one.
We're doing very well, and on piano over there across the room is the fabulous, talented, and lovely, and always charming, Mitch Foreman. Yes, and that's been happy hour for today. Thank you all for joining us. It's been a great show. Hi, Mitch, how are you?
I'm well. How are you, Grant?
I'm good. Any developments on Sing Along with Mitch, the album?
Sing Along with Mitch, the album, it's just out. Reviews are trickling in, all positive, all good.
No one's had anything bad to say. The last review we saw mentioned the word perfect, a perfect jazz album.
Yeah. And the next one I saw didn't quite say perfect, though it was very positive.
It was very positive. So we're sort of talking about entertainment today in a large sense, actually. Mm-hmm. And one of the most bizarre entertainers sitting at the table, actually, four of you are all rather bizarre entertainment, I suppose. But I don't know where to start, really. So I suppose we should start with the most outrageous, which is roller derby.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Sadist.
Yes.
So Sadist Hawkins, of course, everyone's name is in the roller derby is a play on some sort of nice girl name turned awful. Is that right?
Sometimes. We love puns in the roller derby. Sometimes we play on actors' names. I have a sort of feminist bent to mine. We like things that sound tough also.
You don't sound all that tough to listen to your voice, do you?
Yeah.
Do you think she sounds so sweet,
no,
don't you?
Yeah. It's really soft, actually.
I'm terrible at skating. So.
You guys don't skate?
No.
Do you skate, Kate?
I pretend I skate whenever I dance Nia.
Yeah.
Do you? You pretend to be skating?
Oh, we pretend to be roller derby girls sometimes.
Do you? We'll get on to that. Let's talk to the real roller derby girl. I don't know why you'd pretend to be that, but we'll get back to that in a minute.
Why wouldn't
fun.
You?
Because it is fun. And I guess you don't break any bones.
No. Probably a little safer.
So give us just sort of a rough idea. When did roller derby start in New Orleans? It was like 2005 or something?
2005. They started right before the storm collecting women to start skating.
Do you think that's what caused it?
Perhaps.
The storm?
You know, maybe there was such a collection of power that the universe couldn't deal with it. But the women got dispersed after the storm.
Who was collecting the women in the beginning?
The woman I know is Cherry Pie. Pie like the symbol in mathematics.
Cherry Pie.
Yes.
And she was the original roller derby New Orleans.
One of the two original
Who was the other
skaters.
One?
I am not sure, actually.
Really?
I know Cherry Pie because she's a friend.
Okay.
Hi, Cherry Pie. And...
Yeah. What's her real name, Cherry?
I don't know if she would want me to.
Oh, you don't want
to
say that?
It,
okay.
Yeah.
Why not? Is there some sort of secret?
Some women like to keep their professional and private lives.
Well, you're an English instructor at Loyola University, which seems to be a rather straight sort of a person's job.
It seems to be, and I'm out at work as a roller derby girl. This is my first year of being out fully.
So you did it as a secret. You went to classes and you taught people, and what are you teaching, like Chaucer and so on?
No, I actually teach a lot of first-year writing.
First year writing, so how to be a creative writer.
How to be a writer, not even creative.
I'm not even a creative, what, just just spelling?
It's a lot of essay writing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that interesting?
It is, yeah. I have plenty of funny sentences to quote to people.
What do? You get up in front of a class, and how many kids are in there?
20 in each class. I teach 4 classes, and we talk about rhetoric and composition and analysis and how we can do all of that on paper and off paper in our lives, so we get to talk about.
What are you thinking
things.
About while you're teaching all that sort of stuff?
I am.
Do you think about how you're going to kill someone?
I'm trying to keep everybody engaged. Probably that's probably the biggest thing. try to keep people talking, and then I try to think, now, what can I show them on the internet that's going to reinforce this? Because that's, you know, if there's a video.
If it's not on the internet, it doesn't exist.
That is
no one's interested.
True.
It's got to have a YouTube
kind of
video.
Yeah.
Everything has a YouTube video, doesn't it? Are you guys on YouTube?
We cruise YouTube a lot.
Yeah, we're on YouTube.
Force Feed Radio. Very nice. Why are you called Force Feed Radio?
Let me get closer here.
Yeah. You have to get comfortable.
We actually started out as a podcast. And
so there's hope. There's hope for us to be rock stars.
We were bringing our DJ mixes to, I guess, to the airwaves.
Make it a little closer.
If you're supposed to be a podcaster, talk into the microphone.
Yeah.
We
didn't have a
mic.
This
is why it didn't work.
That's clearly what. Well, we started getting more bookings as DJs, and we didn't have enough time to invest in programming the show.
We've got no bookings as DJs. How did you manage that?
We started out as DJs, playing parties in college.
Okay, so the podcast was just an adjunct to getting the
it
stuff
was
out there.
To reach more to out-of-state markets and groups. And, you know, we got on iTunes, and I think we released one show. And then
I think it was like two. Come on.
I think the second one just faded. And
did you do a best of after that?
Yeah, we should have.
Best of Force Feed Radio. Christmas. So it started off as a radio.
Yeah.
Christmas special. Yeah. So it started off as a type of radio.
Radio.
Web radio.
And that's we just stuck with the radio at the end. We felt like, you know.
And it morphed into?
It morphed into a show, you know, and we became more artists. After the whole DJ thing, we started producing original music and and it just, you know, it started progressing and it started getting more towards the electronic scene, which we grew up in, but we listen to everything. We have a really eclectic taste.
So you guys all start out of something and become something else. Kate, you started out as an actress.
That's right.
How did you start out acting? Where were you living?
I was living in Texas. And
you're from Tyler, Texas, I saw.
That's right. You've heard of it?
Yes. Isn't it famous for something like barbecue or something?
There is Dr. Hoggly Woggly's Tyler, Texas barbecue in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
And Earl Campbell, who did play for the Saints a long time ago, played high school football in Tyler.
I used to camp there when I was younger.
Oh, my God.
I think I know.
Possum
Tyler
Kingdom?
State football.
And Possum
Kingdom.
Oh
yeah.
Brian, you were a camper when you were younger?
Oh, yeah. Patrick was more of a – he's an Eagle Scout.
Yeah.
Really?
Gonna put that out there.
Thanks, dude. You got a fire right
where, now. And this was in New Orleans?
No, actually, my parents split when I was younger. My father stayed in New Orleans. My mother moved to North Texas in Dallas.
Okay.
And,
so you grew up in largely in North Texas?
Yeah, mostly. And I would spend most of my holidays –
Patrick's laughing.
With my
just
dad
nervous.
In New Orleans.
Oh, really? Oh, your dad stayed here?
Yeah. Yeah, he's laughing because I put him on blast about the Eagle Scout thing. Don't be ashamed.
That's cool.
I'm married to an Eagle Scout.
It's awesome.
I think they're awesome.
Is your husband still an Eagle Scout?
No, but he is.
He scouts eagles.
He does, right. He works for the National Audubon Society, and that's why we moved down here was because after the oil spill, he's working with the Gulf Restoration and the Mississippi Flyway, so.
So that's a bright side of the oil spill as you got to come down here and move to New Orleans.
Oh, yes, thank you.
So you've only been here for a year then?
Exactly a year. It was October 23rd last year.
Good heavens. Well, welcome to New Orleans.
Well, thank you.
I got all choked up.
Our honeymoon was actually here, and I met him at the Gumbo Pot in Los Angeles. He was a writer, and I was an actor in Los Angeles, and I was serving up gumbo, and he said,
"You were an actress.
Gumbo is no good." He grew up in Baton Rouge.
And you were an actress who was working as a waitress.
That's
in
right.
Los Angeles.
That's right.
So you were a real actress.
I was a real
actress. And your husband was a real screenwriter.
He was a real screenwriter.
What did he write?
He wrote a lot of things that were optioned and nothing that got done.
Yeah, that's the usual story, of course.
Yeah.
You know all about that sadist?
A little bit.
The writing.
How come? Because you're in the writing world as well.
Yeah, I have my boyfriend is a screenwriter. He's right over there. And
there he is. Hello, boyfriend.
He has been optioned also.
Yeah, they like to buy a lot of options, these people in Hollywood.
Well, it keeps them going. They pay good money, and it kind of keeps you, you know.
And everybody out there has to have a job, and they can't make enough movies to employ all these people. So they have to keep buying stuff and meeting writers and having conversations and drinks and dinner and breakfast. And you eventually got sick of it, and your husband gave it up and became an ornithologist.
At the same time, well, he's not actually an ornithologist, neither am I.
I can't believe I even know that word.
I know, it's a
my husband's not an ornithologist, and neither am I. I don't think I've ever heard that sentence before. Why would anyone think he would be an ornithologist?
Because I'm a bird freak. I love birds. Oh. I was like waiting for the big year to come out so I could go see it, because I'm one of those bird nerds that loved it.
Waiting for what to come out?
I have a life list where I count birds, and then we travel, and I count whatever bird I see.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually got a parrot here in New Orleans about a week ago.
You got one.
I
you
think
saw
it's the
one.
Monk parakeet. Yeah, it was a life bird.
Wow.
It's this whole flock that lives
you,
in
yeah, there's this, you have this a life list of birds you want to see in your lifetime.
Yes. Well, there's, I think, 8,000 species. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. That may be a little long, but.
Do you know something about the sadist?
Well, I know about the film that's coming out.
It's out.
Steve Martin film.
It's wonderful.
I think it's interesting.
It's got really great music in it, too.
Do you guys know anything about this film?
I don't know anything.
You're an Eagle Scout, and you don't know anything. what is the film? I don't know anything about it either.
It's called The Big Year, and it's based on a true story of these men that competed against competitive birding. Mm-hmm. And they, in 1 year,
oh,
they
boy.
Just leave work, and they spend tons of money flying everywhere, all over North America, and finding as many birds as they can.
And it's based on a true story.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it happens
Jesus,
every
that
year.
Sounds riveting. Doesn't it?
Well, it does.
Because guys give up their interesting lives to go find birds all across America.
If you're into birds, yeah, it's a rush. But if you're like
really?
Not into birds.
I don't think most people are not into birds. I mean, who wouldn't be? I mean,
oh
no one
God.
Hates birds, but do
yeah.
they?
Oh, yeah. But there are those that are obsessed, and it really deals with that obsession in the film, where it shows these men that are, you know, destroying their marriages just to count birds.
Do they really do that?
Yeah.
And people are like that?
Yeah, that was Owen Wilson. He was the one that was obsessed.
So lucky your husband and you both have the same interest, otherwise.
Right. And that didn't happen until we left Hollywood and moved to North Carolina.
For both of you?
Yeah, it started with me. He bought me a pair of cheap binoculars, and he thought it was just a phase I was going through, you know, because I was an actor, right? But,
right.
I mean, I got obsessed with the outdoors, and he'd been an Eagle Scout, so I wanted to go camping for the first time in my life. You know, I just had a...
But, you know, you hear these stories about people who fall in love and they get married and then they drift apart. You heard the opposite.
Yeah, we had
you
the
drifted
opposite.
Together.
Oh, yeah. It's, like, better now. It's been... We've been together
a little
more than
20
years.
Together.
Yeah, they have in a way. Well, nature, you know, the outdoors and having...
I've heard of it, yeah. I know it. Wow, that's a sort of a romantic story. Are you guys single?
No.
In the band?
We got girlfriends.
You got separate girlfriends, one each.
one each, yeah.
Okay. And Sadist, what about you? This is your boyfriend over here, the screenwriter. Okay, we've got the whole thing sorted out. Okay, so now we're going to shift gears for a little bit and talk about music, but only for about 20 seconds as we're going to introduce a track. So tell us what you guys do. You guys started off as broadcasters
yeah.
and then became rock and roll stars.
Amateur broadcasters.
Amateur broadcasters and became professional musicians.
Well, we just being involved with music for so long, it's a natural progression, and we just started producing music. But we work here in the city, you know, as club DJs, and we take everything that we learn from the dance floors and we apply that in the studio.
What clubs are you working in here?
Name one.
Okay.
not to sound arrogant. It's a small city, you know. Yeah. It's the biggest small city right here, New Orleans. But most of your live music venues, from House of Blues to Republic to Tiventine, as we played. Our residencies include Lafar, which is one of mine. We have residencies in Baton Rouge. Patrick, you want to chime in?
Yeah, there's a spot in Baton Rouge called The Office. And then Ampersands is our electronic, which is...
That's here in New Orleans.
It's more of our experimental gig.
But that's those gigs you're playing other people's music.
Not anymore.
It's all original now.
Most of the pop club venues were playing other people's music. Ampersand and a lot of the festivals and concerts that go on, we get to play our original stuff. And people embrace it better, just like a rock show. But it's electronic music.
Okay, so let's take a listen to an original. This is off your new EP that just came out, right? Which is called Grindhouse.
That's correct, yeah.
And what are we going to take a listen to first?
Let's go with Death Ride.
Death Ride?
Yeah.
Okay. Force Feed Radio. We'll be right back. EP Grindhouse, Force Feed Radio, Death Ride. Wow. What did you think of that when you heard it right then, you guys? Sounds better or worse than usual?
No, it sounds good. It's hard to, I think one of the, I guess, most common misconceptions with electronic music is to listen to it in like an atmosphere like this.
Yeah. Instead of sitting around a table. Right.
Instead of being played in front of,
it's definitely engengineered for big rooms.
Big, you know, 2,000-3,000 people. It's a lot of energy, you know. It's like a rock concert.
Yeah.
Most people I guess you're making a living mostly from playing it live, right? But it's an EP that you can go buy now. Yeah. So you want people to buy it. Sure. So how should we listen to it at home? Crank it.
I mean, yeah. If it's something that you're into and it moves you, you know?
Yeah.
It's
Is it based on a death ride on a motorcycle that
yes.
someone got killed?
Actually, no. It's just, it was really, it goes kind of deep to the 1973 Tales from the Crypt movie where the original, the old one. And there was a scene where a woman had wished for a lot of money and from a, like a monkey's paw kind of deal.
Yeah.
Wasn't the same thing, but
be careful
like
what
that.
You wish for.
Yeah, and so, you know, her husband meanwhile is on the road, and out of nowhere, this death dressed as a biker on a motorcycle,
okay,
chases him down, and she gets all of her money from insurance.
So that's what inspired you.
This biker, yeah. Okay. This whole scene was really cinematic. A lot of her music is really cinematic, and you know it really kind of inspired this whole track. So we titled it Death Ride, and it just sounded cool. It sounded like the synthesizers that we used sounded like, you know, a motorcycle revving
it
and
did.
Changing its
throttle. Oh, I thought that was a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
it's actually a synth. No, there's a sampled motorcycle, but that lead synth in there is a vintage synth, and it just has that weird winding sound
that's
on it.
It's cool. Well done. So, Kate, you also moved from cinema to music. You started. I saw on IMDb that you were in Die Hard.
Yes.
Can you believe it?
Wow.
She's an actual
the original
actress.
Nice.
In Die Hard.
1988.
And then you gave it all up to dance.
I gave it up to move to North Carolina with my husband. I fell in love, and we said we wanted to raise kids. Well, I never got pregnant, and I went through about 5 years in my 40s where I had autoimmune problems and I had bad health. And so I quit acting. I had been doing theater and film in North Carolina and then quit acting because I couldn't hardly move. I was in a lot of pain.
What do you mean autoimmune problems?
Well, they didn't know what it was. They thought I had lupus at one point. I had chronic pain in my joints. I had frozen shoulders. I had rashes. And
God, that must have been
It was horrible. It was horrible because I was a very active, healthy person.
And what part of North Carolina were you in?
This was around Chapel Hill area.
Think that could have been the cause? They never found a cause for it.
No, it could be. It could have been Lyme disease. And back then, they didn't really, you know, they didn't test for that.
So you had frozen shoulders.
Frozen shoulders.
What does that mean?
It means that the shoulder literally freezes, but it's called adhesive capsulitis. And a lot of times diabetics have it, which I wasn't diabetic, but it's when scar tissue starts forming on the capsule of the shoulder. And it just locks it down. And I mean, I'm talking pain.
Sadist is looking a little
sick.
Yeah. I'm thinking, do I have... I think I have another shoulder issue, but sometimes rotator cuff tears can turn
into it. You have a shoulder issue.
I have a chronic shoulder issue, but I think it's muscular.
Maybe you can learn something. What happened?
I went through a lot of physical therapy, but I took a NIA class in 2001.
NIA is spelled NIA.
NIA. It originally stood for non-impact aerobics. That's how it got the name.
Okay.
NIA started in the 80s in Marin County, California, of course.
Yes.
And it was basically started by aerobics teachers who were tired of being injured, and they took a Tai Chi class. They watched the people doing Tai Chi in the park in San Francisco and went, "What the heck is that?" So they took a class. And the master asked them said, "Show me how you move." And they started doing high-impact pounding aerobics. And he's like, no, let me see your bodies move. And they didn't understand. So they started taking Tai Chi, Aikido, and Taekwondo. So they started bringing the martial arts into the aerobics class and took their shoes off, and people left in droves. But they were passionate about it.
Right.
They were like the original fusion fitness. And then they started bringing jazz and modern dance, blending that into the mix. And then eventually the healing arts of Alexander Technique, Feldenkrais, and yoga. And the nine movement forms of NIA is really what makes it and gives it the spice.
So NIA is a combination of yoga, Feldenkrais, Alexander Technique, Tai Chi.
Taekwondo. Aikido.
That's almost impossible to believe, isn't it?
It's fun to watch, too. It's really amazing, and it's all non-impact so that you're not injuring the joints. You're actually healing the joints. That was part of my problem with my autoimmune. They told me at age 37 that I shouldn't dance or play sports anymore, that my knees were shot, basically.
And your shoulders and your knees were shot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm telling you. And now
you had a rash everywhere.
It was horrible.
This could be why you didn't get pregnant.
But I know. I mean, actually, you might be
nothing.
Right.
Personal,
but you might be right. I mean, there was a lot of things going on with my body, and I think NIA brought me into my body.
So what happened? What was the moment?
it was a friend called from New York and said, I'm doing this thing called Nia. And I was like, oh, yeah, I took that like 5 years ago. And then I literally felt this light come into me. And it was like, I said to her, Jennifer, I'm going to be a Nia teacher. And she's like, oh, my God, you'd be great. So I looked it up and I saw the training was in Charleston, which was 3 months away. And I took the training and I actually had a concussion. My husband and I were doing bird surveys a week before on Baldhead Island, North Carolina, and we'd seen a merlin, which is a beautiful falcon.
And it flew into your head?
No, but I was writing it down, and my husband took a quick left in the golf cart, and I went flying because I wasn't holding on, and I went flying off.
You flew out of a golf cart?
While you're
writing down the word merlin?
On my head. And it was a miracle, and I'm like, I'm fine, my knees work. And he's like, no, you're bleeding. And then I felt something wet, it was just bad. So I'm
a bit confused now. Is this before you had the rash and everything or after?
No, this is after.
This is when you
actually
had a rash, and you had a frozen shoulder and frozen knees, and you're riding around in a golf cart writing down the word Merlin. Your husband took a sharp lift and you fell out.
Right. I'd been doing Nia for 3 months.
Oh, you've been doing Nia already. Okay.
Right, and that's why I didn't really hurt my body. I really rolled with it, but I did hit my head. But I had the concussion. So when I did the training, I had a major concussion a week before. And so my husband had to drive me to Charleston. But what was amazing during the training, we did lots of turns and spinning. And, I mean, I was having vertigo. But I felt amazing. And the trainer had said, oh, yeah, I had a concussion before my brown belt. Don't worry about it. That was the white belt training, which is your first training.
So they've already got a whole stratified system of belts, this Nia thing that they've completely made up in Marin County after doing yoga,
etc.
That's
right. That's right.
Tai Chi, Taekwondo.
1983. That's right.
1983.
Is it Steven Seagal Aikido? Is that
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's Steven Seagal.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's Aikido. Yeah. Is Nia part of Aikido?
Yeah, Aikido is one of the martial arts that we draw energy from. So
and if you,
turns and spirals.
You take what other people's energy and you use it against them.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're blind.
There's a hilarious, back to YouTube, video of Steven Seagal, I think in like the early 80s, with some ridiculous hair, doing his Aikido demonstrations, and it's really funny.
Yeah, that was when I was in Hollywood, so I know what the hair looked like.
Oh,
it's embarrassing.
He was very prima donna. After he would put someone down, he would fix his hair.
Fluff his mullet.
Right. It was really entertaining.
So You did this Nia training, mm-hmm. and it completely unfroze your shoulders, knees, and got rid of the rash and so on. So it's a miracle.
It is a miracle, but it's also what it did to my body. You know, not being able to bend my knees or squat. Now I can do full squats. I'm more flexible than I've ever been, and I'm 57 years old. At 37, they told me no more dancing or sports, and now I do whatever I want. My body is full and alive. But part of it is that I'm connected to my body and honoring my body. Had I been her age back then and roller derby was in, I would have been the first one signing up because I was a tough girl and I did a lot of damage to my body. Yeah. I was
Are you a tough girl, sadist?
Theoretically, but so much of this sounds really, really similar to my experience of being active again. And even though I've had some injuries since I started skating, I can use my body a lot better than I used to. Mm. And it's really liberating as a woman who's been body conscious all of her life to look down at those hips and say, I can do something with these.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to lose any weight. This is...
You want to be sort of heavy when you're smacking into people.
Yeah.
Let's come back and talk about what it's like to smack into other women
on
roller skates in a minute. But first, I want Mitch Foreman to play something for us so we can all just relax a little bit. Mitch, what are you thinking of playing today?
I'm thinking of playing something that's not related much to roller derby, but almost related to birds. So, because it's a song about a cat I had when I was living in New York many, many years ago.
A cat?
A cat who would sit and look at birds. So it's called Ramona's Fantasy.
Mm. Okay, Mitch Foreman. Mm.
Thank you.
Butch Foreman. And Ramona's Fantasy, did you come up with that sitting watching the cat watching birds?
You know what? I don't remember. The truth is I recently got a request on my website, some guy asking for the music for this song, so I spent a few moments earlier this morning looking for it, and it was written a long time ago. I don't quite remember. The funny thing is to actually see, I have a book of handwritten out music, which you rarely see these days, especially from me, kids with the computers and stuff, you know?
So you actually found the original when you sat down and wrote the notes down?
Yeah, I found a book of, it says Songbook Number 1, and I don't have the year, but it's the address is East 6th Street, New York City.
Wow, and you used to sit down and actually write songs out by hand, like note for note, like like Beethoven?
Yeah.
And then you would play it out. I mean, you would actually write it. That's amazing. No one does that hardly anymore, do they?
I know. No, it's all so much easier on a computer, you know?
Can you just play now and the music writes itself, as it were, like on a program?
Yeah. You can.
So you don't even, no one needs to know how to write music anymore, right?
Well, it helps to.
Except you need to know how to read it.
Yeah, you need to know how to read it to know if it's doing it properly or not.
Do you force feed radio guys know anything about writing and reading music at all? You play an instrument?
I played in middle school. I played the trumpet in middle school. So.
Hey, I have a question.
Trumpet? Yeah, Mitch?
I have a question for them. What programs do they use to make their music in?
Currently, we're using Ableton Live, and a lot of our synthesizers are either vintage or we use Native Instruments, which has a lot of really cool, interesting sounds that are also used for a lot of big films right now.
Hey, so, do you guys know this guy Skrillex?
Oh, yeah.
I love him. I got to meet him a while ago with my son.
He's doing big things right now. He's definitely brought this style of music to the mainstream, that's for sure.
It was cool. He was a cool guy.
Yeah, he's really educated on music. He's a true musician.
He was using
live. Who was your audience?
He was using live also.
Sorry,
Mitch, Yeah, definitely. You could either use it in the studio for production or for playback, which is pretty interesting.
And who is your audience for this sort of stuff and Skrillex stuff?
I'd say, the demographic would be between the ages of 16 to 45. I mean, I've seen...
You got to go down. My kid's 15 and he's way into it, so you got to go a little lower.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it's getting there. It's getting younger. But that's just the new wave, man. It's just the younger energy is there. You know, a lot of kids that are our age...
How old are you guys?
We're 28. We're born a month apart. You know, they're all settled down doing their thing. They're not really into the music as much as we are. So, you know, definitely the younger market kind of breathes more life into what we do.
What sort of music are they playing at the Roller Derby? Sadist?
We have a variety. We have some country stuff, a lot of rock and roll, a lot of New Orleans-inspired stuff, brass bands. We actually have a live band and a DJ and a sound guy at every bout. So we're very into the entertainment as well as the sport.
I saw on the website that you're described as the bout production manager.
I am.
What does that mean? So you're responsible for putting on the show?
I'm the event planner. So I assign jobs. We go every time that we have a bout to UNO. We put down a floor. We tape off the track. We set up the front of house and get all of our, you know, tickets and everything in order. So it's a big job, and I sort of manage that, and I round up entertainment and the DJ and the announcers.
So you're responsible for all that stuff, and then you have to go out and kick ass as well.
I have to switch gears pretty fast. And
does that take up a lot of brain space? And you're like
all that I have. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to concentrate like crazy when you're out on the track.
Yes.
Because you're going to get hurt badly if you don't.
You can, or you can just not do very well, and you could lose, which really stinks.
Do you like to win more than anything?
No, I really like to hit people more than anything.
I get this impression
like
that you're not kidding.
I like to be in charge. I like to tell people what to do, and I like to hit people.
So you can do all that.
I can.
As a roller, what would you have done if you didn't discover roller derby?
I don't know.
You would have
know.
Had to drink tried, and go out in the streets.
I tried to play football when I was in elementary school, but they wouldn't let me. I'm not sure what I would have done. I was about to start a dance troupe.
Yeah.
Before I found roller derby.
So what happened? Did you roller skate as a kid?
No. I went to a few birthday parties, but I had not been on skates at all in 10 years until December of 2009 when I tried out.
2009, just 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Wow. And now you're already the team captain of the What is it, Crescent City Wenches?
The Crescent Wenches.
Crescent Wenches.
Mm-hmm.
So you've had a meteoric rise to success here. You're the bout manager. You're the co-captain of the Crescent Wenches.
Well, the roller derby appreciates hard workers, and I have taken on what now feels like too many responsibilities. But I love all of it. It keeps me very, very busy.
But more than anything, you like to hurt people.
I don't like to hurt people. I like to hit people.
Hit people.
Yeah,
sorry.
Hurting people is not good, but if I can push people out of the way, that's great.
So you like to hit people, but people who you hit don't necessarily get hurt. You can push someone over.
Right.
Because it looks like so violent, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Are you into this violent stuff, Kate? Is it?
Well,
are you against it?
I certainly was. My ex-husband was a Golden Gloves boxer.
You have an ex-husband as well as a current husband,
yes.
And he was a Golden Gloves boxer.
Yeah, I did the small town Texas girl thing, married at 19. But I definitely was around. He used to have me hit the heavy bag every afternoon.
Really?
But what's great, I still get to punch. I punch, I kick, I block in the NIA classes.
Mm-hmm. This could be why your shoulder got frozen there, if you've been punching a heavy bag from 19.
Well, yeah.
You were married at 19, did you say?
Yeah.
How long did that last for?
4.5 years, because I was going to make it work no matter what. But I learned.
Sadist, you're not married. You weren't married, right?
No.
You have a boyfriend over here, the screenwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And does he go to every bout?
Yes, he is.
He's a good boyfriend.
He's in the running for a Derby Spouse 2011.
That's great. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So this is Mr. Sadist.
Mr. Sadist.
Yeah.
So
it's matrilineal.
So you hadn't been on roller skates for 10 years.
Right.
You went out there to the tryout thing. I guess they have tryouts.
Yes.
Strapped the skates on. Uh-huh. What happened?
I did okay. I came home and told Mr. Sadist that my butt was going to look better than it had ever looked, because I was so sore after just tryouts that I couldn't sit down.
How
for
does
the
it
next
look,
days.
Mr. Sadist?
Fantastic.
Two thumbs up from
great.
Mr. Sadist.
Yeah.
One thumb for
it's
each
on,
butt.
It's on Facebook. That's how
your
good
butt is on
yeah,
Facebook.
It's profile pic.
Is it? Well, you must be proud of it.
I am. I feel like I worked really hard for it.
So you do a lot of, there's a lot of training that goes into this.
It's intense training. We train for, a maximum of 9 hours a week. So we're spending hours every evening. I've done roller derby for, this will be the third night this week. So we train a lot. When we're not training, we're working for the league, answering emails, cross training, thinking about
roller
derby,
planning lineups. This is a whole way of life.
It is a way.
So could you make a living out of this and forget Loyola University?
I cannot. There's no professionalism in roller derby.
There's none.
No professional.
I don't believe that. I think if you really put in and you market it, you get sponsors. You could. I mean, I made a career out of playing other people's music.
Yeah.
Being a DJ.
Yeah.
You know, my parents frowned on it for a while, but now they understand. You know, I did a show for the New Orleans Saints. And somehow the check was sent to my dad, who's the biggest Saints fan. And he was like, okay, I get it now.
You've made it. Right?
And there's a way. There is a way to do it. So I wouldn't, I wouldn't look down on that.
No. I am hopeful. Just right now, there's no professional aspect of roller derby.
Not in the whole country.
Not in the whole country. Not in the whole world.
Isn't that rather strange? How could there not be a way to make money out of women dressed in little outfits whacking into each other?
It is all league run. Every league runs their own league. We actively refuse ownership, not sponsorship, but ownership. And so to some degree, the need to control the leagues has kept us from becoming professional.
Can you guys follow that? Could some entrepreneur come along and make this into a business?
I'm telling you, it's sponsorship.
Sponsorship, yes.
I think Brian and Patrick could be the guys, because you guys have got a business sense. You have a sneaker store, don't you?
That's correct. Actually, Patrick owns a sneaker shop, and I'm the brand manager.
What is it?
It's called Sneaker Politics. Go ahead, Pat.
Nice.
Thanks. No, Sneaker Politics. We actually have a Lafayette location. It's been open for 5 years, and then we've been open for a year and a half
in Metairie.
Mm.
Near Lakeside Mall.
Behind Lakeside Mall in Metairie, on Severn.
On Severn, yeah.
And why sneakers?
Well, it just fits the lifestyle that we're in.
Being the
music,
DJs, the fashion and music, kind of goes hand in hand, and it just kind of fell in place. The people that own the franchise, were like, yeah, you guys are out,
See, it always sounds so easy, doesn't it, when people tell you these stories, like, oh, yeah, we just got a sneaker store in Metairie.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to go and find the space and rent it.
It's not that easy.
No, I'm sure it's
really hard. We're really fortunate that, we're not married and we have kids right now and mortgages.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. But we
it's
just know
it's gonna either be sneakers or kids.
We have an open window right now to take advantage of that time and strength.
How long do you think you'll have that before your strength is sapped by those damn kids?
I think we're pushing to 35, and then we're gonna start, you know, looking at some retirement opportunities with doing music for film. Right. Doing a few more retail stores, and then probably investing in something like a studio or anything, you know, office space, whatever.
So are you saving money right now?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you guys are doing good.
Trying.
Yeah.
Do you work in the sneaker store, Patrick?
Yes.
You have to stay there all day like selling sneakers?
All day.
See, that doesn't sound very romantic. People working in a shoe store used to be like the worst job ever.
It's more of a boutique.
It's pretty nice. We have a DJ booth built into the checkout counter. Yeah. So
it's not your normal married with children sneaker store.
Right. It's not an outbound situation.
It's cool.
It is cool. It's very hip. It's a nice atmosphere. We put it together ourselves. It came out of our head, and it came to life. So we're really excited to have it.
Well, that's a really cool sort of way of life you guys have hooked up for yourselves. Let's take a listen to another song off the EP Grindhouse. Which one should we hear this time?
This one's what, Alkaline?
Yeah, Alkaline.
You're
Alkaline.
Asking me if it's Alkaline.
This one is it's a little more aggressive. I don't really have an explanation for the name. It just kind of came natural. Okay. And this one actually, after it was released, got a lot of praise from big producers. So we're really excited to have it.
We're excited to listen to it. Let's check it out. Force Feed Radio.
Oh.
Alkaline. Force Feed Radio off the EP Grindhouse. Available now, correct?
That's correct. On iTunes, Amazon, Juno, and Beatport.
Well, now that one sounded a bit more good in the headphones. It didn't sound so quite so challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, we get mixed reviews on how they sound depending on what system that you're hearing it on.
Yeah.
Once again, these tracks are engineered for really, really big festival systems. So you could, like, feel it in your chest. There's a lot of low end that you're not catching these headphones.
That's, I mean, dance music now is all about the low end. The bass.
Has the dance music world changed?
Oh, dramatically.
What to what?
It was a little more subtle. It was more, you know, all about the arrangement and how it sounded. But now it's gotten, just like rock music, it's just gotten heavier and grungier and louder. And that's why they're calling electronic music the new
old rock electronic music.
And what are they calling rock music?
I don't know.
Dead.
Please.
Dead.
It's just sad. I mean, we love rock music. We grew up listening to rock music. And it's just, I've yet to hear some really good stuff coming out yet, you know?
Where would you hear it if it did come out?
I don't know. I mean, I'm constantly reading Rolling Stone, looking for new reviews of new acts, but I don't see that much. I mean, I think really right now the best rock band that I've heard in a while, and it's not really aggressive, but it's just great music, is the Black Keys.
The Black Keys?
Incredibly great band. Great.
And is that on radio?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it's produced by a DJ. I mean, most of your record producers are DJs.
It's
are
you guys kind of a murky sound, right?
Are you guys interested in working with real guys to make produce records?
Definitely.
Are you working on that?
Don't be
that's
fooled
by that's part of the retirement plan.
Yeah,
there and there
that's
somewhere.
Later down
you
the
get
road.
The kids.
We're doing that. Yeah. So, I got the car seat. You know.
So sadist.
Yes.
Has being a roller girl solved your body image problems?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. It's and now problems maybe a little bit of a heavy
well,
use
not
of the
a
word.
Problem issue.
Issues, yeah. I mean, you know, as a woman, you're always thinking, oh, I should, you know, this part of me should be thinner or bigger or more muscular or less muscular. And it's really been nice to know that there's a direct purpose for every part of my body now. It either needs to move or not move or go
so
in this direction
so
or
you've
not.
Got in touch with your body, as it
yeah,
were.
Yeah, it sounded very much. Similar.
So which is
what Kate
was
saying.
You were saying, Kate, about Nia putting you in touch with
oh, absolutely. And it's really, you know, it's loving my body and accepting it exactly as it was. When I started, I was 20 pounds heavier than I am now. And I remember teaching, and there's one where we rumble. And when I was rumbling, my butt was just, and I was realizing my butt is to the class, and they're watching it. And then I said something like, just let it shake. And everybody laughed, and it was great. It was, like, so freeing. And in that moment, it was like, I actually love my body. I love the roundness of my body. I love the power and strength of my body. And as I started losing weight, and I was getting stronger, it wasn't intentional. I wasn't trying to lose weight, but it was just what was happening naturally as I was conditioning my body in a deeper sense. And it's connecting from a place rather than punishing the body. Or I got to go work out because I ate too much last night or drank too much, whatever it was. It's I'm doing this because I love the music. I love moving to the music, and I love the way my body feels. It's not about what I look like.
That's a really interesting thing to say because as guys, mostly what we do is we talk about punishing our bodies. We have to go to the gym and work out and lift weights and lift more weights than the guy next to us and run longer than than you did last time. Is that a mistake? Is that a completely ridiculous approach?
From my opinion, because I was. I was a gym rat. I started at 19.
You're a gym rat.
Yes,
you
I was a gym
got married at 19 and started going to the gym at 19.
He was a Golden Gloves boxer, but he was also a power lifter. Mm-hmm. So
what happened to that
started
guy,
lifting
by the way?
Weights.
Wow. Where is he today?
He's still in Texas. He ended up being a coach.
Did he get a concussion like you?
I don't know. It's been never a long time. It's been a long time. But what I appreciate about my ex-husband is that I was very involved in sports, and I played softball and volleyball, and I've loved basketball. I love sports.
But as far as guys are concerned, because, I'm just thinking maybe you guys are thinking the same thing, as I'm thinking I'd love to be able to do something cool, but I don't have the – I mean, most guys aren't into loving their bodies, are they? Are we, gentlemen?
Not anymore.
Well,
Mitch?
I don't think most of us
not
are
anymore.
Because culturally we're told, I think women have always been, but I think men now much more are, is that your body's not good enough. And we're told that by media and people wanting to sell
us. Not good
us
enough for?
For her or him or for the job or for, it's really for yourself. You know, it's looking at yourself and judging yourself because your breasts aren't big enough or your butt's too big.
Why are you pointing at Sadis when you said your breasts aren't big enough? They look fine.
She mentioned that, you know, and it's like, that's one of those ironic things is that, you know, my age, we were fighting for women's rights when I was a teenager, right? That was all what was in. And now plastic surgery is more than it ever is, even though, you know, women have gained equality, that more women are enhancing everything and liposuctioning everything. And it's really, for me, about self-acceptance wherever my body is. And it's certainly coming to New Orleans. I've gained 5 pounds since I've been here because the food here is so good. And I just like, this is my New Orleans body. All right. You know, I'm still dancing. I'm still moving. I'm grooving. But I love the jiggle. I love the way it feels when I shimmy and when I rumble. I like the way that feels. And that's part of being a woman. You know, it's that juicy, liquid part of being a female. But underneath, there is rock solid strength, like what you were talking about.
I think we like that stuff, too.
Yeah.
On this side of the table. We're just saying.
Yeah. I don't think you could have said it better.
That might be a good note to go out on. Mightn't it? Tell us, before we go, tell us where we can see the Big Easy Roller Girls.
The Big Easy Roller Girls are playing in a tournament, both the All-Stars and the Crescent Witches, on November 5th in Gulfport, Mississippi. After that, you can see us March 31st, 2012.
March 31st, 2012. That's the next time you're back?
That's our next season.
That's a long time to get ready.
It is.
For?
We have a big off-season.
So we've got a link to the Roller Girls on our site. It's neworleans.com, and we have a link to to your site, Nature.
Great.
Also, as well, Mitch, what's up? Oh, Running of the Bulls. We didn't get to that. We have to talk about Running of the Bulls next time. But we've got that on your site as well.
Yes.
Okay. And Kate Finlayson, thank you very much for being
here. You're welcome.
Kate Finlayson is an award-winning actress. We didn't even talk about the awards you've won. She's an acting coach and a teacher of the movement dance therapy, NEA. Brooke Etheridge is better known as Sadist Hawkins, an English instructor at Loyola University by day and by night, a Big Easy Roller Girl, Force Feed Radio. Thanks for coming in. Brian Norman and Patrick Bowden. Sneaker Politics is their store.
Thank you.
We'll be having kids in the next 5 years. Thanks for joining us here on Happy Hour. Our show is recorded live here at the Columns Hotel in Uptown New Orleans. A great place to come and stay if you're coming to New Orleans. And a great place to come and have a drink if you're already here. If you're coming to stay with us here in New Orleans and you want to look for a hotel or a tour, or you need tips on what to do while you're here, check in with our friends at neworleans.com, the official New Orleans travel site. The producer of our show today has been Melinda Hawes. Our associate producer is Chris Kehoe. Mitch Cry is our technical director, and Christian Unruh, our music director. Our web designer and link to the real world is Cliff Brigden. Our theme song was written in real music and is being played right now by the fabulous, lovely, and talented Mitchell Foreman, whose record is also on sale. Sing along with Mitch. There's a link to that on our site. If you'd like to be on our show, join us on Happy Hour anytime. Write to us at itsneworleans@gmail.com. We'd love to have you. What else do I have to say? Oh, yeah, check out our other shows. There's plenty more Happy Hours to listen to, as well as Out to Lunch with Peter Raschuti and Kathy Finn. That's recorded live at Commander's Palace. And Mindset with psychiatrist Dr. Nick Paycheck. That's also on our website, itsneworleans.com. You can keep up with us by liking us on Facebook, following us on Twitter, and subscribing to our podcast on iTunes. Happy Hour is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsneworleans.com. For Mitch Foreman on the piano, I'm Grant Morris. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Happy Hour.